The Holy Gospel according to Mark in the 7th chapter. Now, when the Pharisees and some of the scribes who had come from Jerusalem gathered around Jesus, they noticed that some of his disciples were eating with defiled hands, that is, without washing them. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they thoroughly wash their hands, thus observing the tradition of the elders. And they do not eat anything from the market unless they wash it. And there are also many other traditions that they observe, the washing of cups, pots, and bronze kettles. So the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, "Why do your disciples not live according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with defiled hands?" He said to them, "Isaiah prophesied rightly about you hypocrites, as it is written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching human precepts as doctrines.' You abandon the commandment of God and hold to human tradition." Then he called the crowd again and said to them, "Listen to me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside a person that by going in can defile, but the things that come out are what defile. For it is from within, from the human heart, that evil intentions come. Fornication, theft, murder, adultery, avarice, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, folly. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person." The Gospel of our Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You may be seated. So last weekend, I was away because my husband and I were attending a friend's wedding, and we were also visiting his family, too, and staying with them. And while we were staying at his family's home, I committed the most grievous sin, an evil intention, if you will. I drank a few glasses of my sister-in-law's almond milk. And she noticed. She noticed. And I could tell that she did not appreciate that as she took out the jug and said, "Wow, this is really empty." Now, for some of you, maybe like me, you might be like, "What's the problem here?" I was a guest. I drank the only milk option in the fridge that I could find. But I have come to learn that there are unwritten rules at play in families. Like, you don't touch your sister-in-law's stuff when you stay at the parents' house. Apparently, you don't drink her almond milk, even if you just really need it for your matcha lattes. Now, are these rules written down? No, they are not. But apparently, they are rules that everybody but me knows. Now, today we're coming across an unwritten rule for the people, the crowd and the disciples. There's no law in the Old Testament that says everyone must wash their hands before they consume food. Priests should purify themselves, sure, but that's a different type of rule. Is washing your hands a good idea before you eat? Yes, thank you. Yes, John, it is a good idea. Now that we know things about germs and such, right? But it's not a law, and that's the difference. I just want you to imagine, can you imagine police officers having to enforce people washing their hands? Think about the houses of young children. Can you imagine that? It'd be a nightmare. Now, Jesus is not anti-law. Indeed, if we remember, he states that he came to fulfill the law. And the fulfillment of the law, the nucleus of it, what is at the heart of it, and all the commandments is what Jesus proclaims, that you love the Lord your God with all your heart and your neighbor as yourselves. Good. You guys got it, right? You know that, right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart and your neighbor as yourself. That's a law that influences how you treat other people, and in turn, how the world observes you as a follower of God. Indeed, Jesus isn't mad about the Ten Commandments or pieces of other Jewish law that help people live good lives in service to one another by honoring and serving God. He delights in those laws, and every deed and miracle that Jesus does is in service of those laws as well. He's mad about laws like this one that make it hard for regular people. You see, if people aren't obeying all the laws, then they aren't clean, right? They aren't ritually clean, which means they can't enter the temple, which means they can't worship or do sacrifices, which means they're cut off from the worshiping community, which means they're isolated, which means they're outcast, which means they're outside of God's love. All because you forgot to wash your hands or your veggies from the market. That seems like a pretty steep price to pay. And this idea of being cut off, cast out, it's so much reinforced by the language we hear today. I want you to notice what the religious elders say here. Why do you eat with defiled hands? When someone calls you defiled, it's not good, right? That wouldn't feel good to hear. The word defiled doesn't just mean, oh, your hands are a little dirty, maybe you need to clean under your fingernails a little bit. It means that your hands have been violated or spoiled. They're not good anymore, they're bad. You might even want to hide them in shame. If you're defiled, then your hands are unfit to worship God. You're out. It is a matter of being fit to worship God and being unfit to worship God. It's about the religious elders asserting that Jesus doesn't have the power and that he can't be of God because he isn't even worthy to worship God. Today, we're not dealing with a list of rules for healthy living. Today, we are delving into the topic of what can cut you off from God's love. Now, when I personally think of being cut off from God's love, what comes to mind is a word that is my old friend, the word abomination. Remember that one? Now, I normally get to the privilege of hearing that word abomination connected with LGBTQIA plus folks, and that they are cut off from God, which I will say, though, through lived experience, I've come to find is wholly untrue. But then I heard abomination this summer at the National Youth Gathering in New Orleans in a fun, new way. We were sitting on a bench in New Orleans outside of a mystical spiritual lady's booth who she practiced kind of spiritual readings, energy readings. She did tarot cards and things like that. Now, our kids were all off doing a scavenger hunt, and the adults were spending some time together. And every day, we would see these mystic folks around the city. And today we saw them, and they were a ton of them just seated outside of the Catholic cathedral. Now, I happen to be a pretty curious person. Indeed, I had never gotten a reading done before, and I kind of wanted to know what it was all about, since these folks were everywhere. Was it just another tourist trap, or was there more to it? It seemed to be such an interesting and important part of the history and the spiritual nature of New Orleans, so I tried it. Now, the woman who did my reading truly seemed very genuine, and it turned out to be honestly really interesting. Did it convert me? No, I'm still here. Did I really take it exceptionally seriously as truth with a capital T? No, not either. But I did respect the person doing it. And honestly, a lot of the stuff she said rang true. She told me I was very protected by animals, and as a cat mother to four, I'm like, that's probably true. Now, like experiencing the Catholic cathedral set behind this woman, it reminded me that there are lots of different spiritualities out there, and that God can be at work in the world in many, many different ways that are unknown to me. And I was contemplating this as we were sitting waiting for another woman to have her reading done when a stranger came up to us. This woman was very charged with a lot of energy and a lot of self-righteous energy, and she said, "Why do you consult with fortune tellers? Do you not know they are an abomination?" There it was. And here's the implication. That woman doing the readings was an abomination. I consulted with her. Therefore, I am an abomination. Therefore, we are both outside of God's love. We are unfit to worship God in this interloper's viewpoint. But after this experience, I honestly felt more defiled by the woman harassing me about abominations than I felt about speaking to this mystic woman. And I just want to remind you that when we hear people use words like abomination, we have to remember that it applies to a lot in the Old Testament, including consuming pork. So if you have done so recently, you too, my friend, are an abomination. And you can be the judge of this, but I don't think either that I've had too many problems worshiping God since that experience. Just as I imagine the disciples didn't have too many problems along with Jesus worshiping God when they neglected to wash their hands. The truth is that people enjoy having power over others and putting limits on God's ability to connect and to be with us. And what all of this really comes down to is who we know God to be. Now, I have no desire to mock the statutes of the Old Testament, but I do believe that Jesus gives us a different perspective on what is and isn't as important to our own faith. Do we know the same freeing God who Jesus knows? Or do we cling onto man-made rules and regulations that matter to people in power? We might want to nod our heads, yes, of course we follow Jesus and Jesus alone. But I bet that when it comes down to it, this is easier said than done. It's easier to put the rules of the world first than what Jesus calls us to do. It's easier to say we love our God with our lips and say we love God with our whole heart and we love our neighbor as ourselves than it is to actually live that out in our lives. The laws that Jesus lays before us, they are all about the way that we live out our faith, our love of God. Even that list of vices that he tells later on after he has left the elders and is with the crowds of people and the disciples, I know that they can seem very scary. We might be tempted even to think about them as a list of things that label us as abominations or rules of things that we have to comply with in order to consider ourselves pure and worthy, good enough to be in relationship with God. But that's not what they're about. Jesus is all about the way we live our faith. And what I want you to notice about the list is that it's a list of things that could hurt other people. Avarice, extreme greed or personal wealth, slander, making false statements about people, fornication, not just having sex, but using sex to harm other people, theft, murder, deceit, pride, folly, licentiousness, envy, they are all about what comes from within, but what comes from within to harm someone else, and in turn, how that hurts us as well. Things that get in the way of us loving God and our neighbors. And this isn't an exhaustive list hanging over our shoulder to judge us to damnation, or a list compiled to say that if you step one toe out of line, you're outside of God's love. It's a list to kind of check us, to help us, to put that mirror up to ourselves, to put us back on the path of following God, to remind us that when we are intentionally following Jesus, what comes from that following is love. Love, not perfection. And that's really what I want us to think about today. What kind of people do we want to be as followers of Jesus, as modern day Christians? Do we want to be a legalistic community that runs around calling out abominations so that we might feel self-righteous as the religious elders in Jesus' time did? Or do we want to be a people that lifts up barriers to knowing and following God? And at the same time, when we are welcoming people to know Jesus, they see Jesus revealed through us. Do we want to be a people that live out the love of God? Amen.